8:45 on the clock. Let's call the order of the Gage County Board of Supervisors regular meeting. Stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, none under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Open Meeting Act is posted on the southeast corner of the wall. Attendance by observation. Juergens, Hill, Dorn, Bauman, Lytle, Byers, Setzer. Next thing is the consent agenda. And the consent agenda consists of the general agenda, approval of minutes from the meeting held April 17, 2013, approval of all claims through May 1st, 2013 in the amount of $297,673.36, approval and place on file all correspondence received, approve utility permit number 951 for Northern Natural Gas to maintenance issue in Section 7, Township 2 North, Range 6 East, and Sicily Township. Approve utility permit 952, Lower Big Blue NRD install waterline right-of-way 031, located in the northeast quarter, the northwest quarter of Section 29, Township 3 North, Range 7 East, Rockford Township, and in Holmesville. Addition located in the northeast quarter of the northeast quarter of Section 29, Township 3 North, Range 7 East, Rockford Township. Approved canceling check 12090060 to Pinnacle Bank in the amount of $10.99 due to order being canceled. And that is it for the consent agenda. Need a motion to approve or disapprove, please?
Move to approve the consent agenda.
Move to approve the consent agenda by Lytle.
Matt, second. I'll second that. But
second
then
by
Terry has a one for Johnny's Welding. He'd like to pull off of the.
So we're going to pull off the claims for Johnny's Welding
in the amount of $353.60. Vote on it separately.
Okay, so let's consider all the claims and items 1 through 7, with the exception of the claim Mr. Juergens just stated. I have a motion by Lytle, second by Dorn. Any further discussion? Seeing none, vote. 7-0 to approve. We'll consider the claim in the amount of $353.66?
60 cents.
60 cents for Johnny's Welding. And Mr. Juergens will probably abstain.
Move to approve that.
Moved by Dorn.
Second.
Second by Lytle. Discussion. Vote. 6-1, or 6-2 approved, Juergens abstaining. So on the agenda, on the regular agenda's comments for the from the public and requests for future agenda items. Looks like everybody's here for some other business. Committee reports, building grounds and winter lights.
Nothing.
Equalization.
Nothing.
Finance and insurance.
Last week, Wednesday, we had, I think that was a date. Anyway, we had insurance with Lowell and Brad, and Amber was down this time. And part of what we discussed was every 7 years they have to review, like, our plan. And reviewing it now because the county has been on this self-insurance plan for 7 years. That's when it started, or whatever, which I thought was kind of interesting. They came up with a list of probably 10 or 15 things. That a lot of it was wording that we need to review, and some of it they know, some of the things with the new Obamacare that they're going to need to change a little wording here or there, and that's part of what they're reviewing. We had about 4 or 5 things that Amber's going to go back and research some more and get us some more information on and come back so that we, you know whether to include them or not include them. And one of the things, and I'll just bring up one thing that was for discussion with the Obamacare, a dependent is included on a family policy until they're like 26 or 26 and a half or something. And part of, we haven't had one yet, haven't had a case in the county, but if a dependent becomes pregnant, they're covered, but the baby, the minute the baby is born on our plan, is not covered. And a little bit of discussion was, should they be covered for 30 days or not? Now, those are just some of the things that we're viewing in the plan or whatever and stuff. So We tentatively set up for June 18th the employee meeting with the employees for the insurance like you had last year or whatever. So that's the tentative date right now if we can, if everything works and falls in place. Finance, I guess we really didn't have a lot we talked about in finance. I know in Roden Bridge and we talked with Galen, the rock part of the budget in the rock and gravel for the county, going to be over 100% on that. We realize that, and we've had conversations about that. As I told him, I says, no, I'd rather know about that now that we'll be over that. But there's some room in the budget yet maybe to still cover that, and if not, then before the end of the fiscal year, may have to do a transfer or whatever. But due to the roads being so dry last summer, and then you start getting the rain now, and particularly some of the last few rains, we've had a lot of requests for rock on the county roads and also the township roads, but this is just township rock and gravel. We're at 100%, basically 100%. I think we might be over 100% of that part of the budget for it. So,
okay. Human resources, employee relations?
No report.
Law enforcement?
Mark, you got anything you want to share with the board, emergency management wise?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Just what I updated the committee on Monday morning. We're well into the rewriting of the local emergency operations plan. We've already sent part of it up to be start getting NEMA, to the Nebraska Emergency Management Agency. We have a representative there that we have contact with. So it's well on its way. I know they sent out a letter that, you know, they'd like to see it May 1st or whatever. Today's May 1st, but they weren't ready for us when we sent everything up to them already. So we're still right on schedule with them. So so we're working quite a bit on that. We got all the information back from the villages and cities, which was nice to get back right away. We appreciated that. That helped us out a lot. Working a lot on the state communication systems. We had some meetings, again, last week. And we're going to be talking with the NRD with the new water tower east of Blue Springs there. We're going to be putting some communications microwave systems on there for a data system for the county, so that part of the statewide system. One of the things I just want to touch, and you may have read it in the newspaper, we did have another exercise. This will be our fourth exercise, actually, with the military civil support team, the 72nd WMD, Weapons of Mass Destruction Support Team. We had that at the old Beatrice Community Hospital and held it on all-day training there. We started out, and they mocked up a disaster where there had been some type of chemical release in the emergency room area, and they had some victims, and the Beatrice Fire and Rescue was called first. When they got there, identified it as a unknown chemical that had been released. I was contacted, and we went through every step of the way, including me contacting the chairman of the board for a disaster declaration, moving it up to the state level, requesting the civil support team because it was an unknown chemical, and found a few little problems there at the state level. We called him before they actually, the duty officer wasn't at work yet, so he was on the road, and so it became a little bit of a challenge there, but I think they did some changes there, so that worked out real well. The 72nd Civil Support Team came down. Like I said, this is their fourth training with them. They're a team of Army, National Guard, or actually full-time Army and Air Force personnel. There's 28 members on the team. They bring a fleet of equipment, including their own mobile communications suite and a laboratory, which everything in the laboratory, basically, they can test just as if it was sent off to the University of Nebraska Omaha laboratory. They have everything in that truck. Both two trucks alone together are over $4 million in equipment. The civil support team can be deployed for anything that's nuclear, biological, chemical, or radiological, or explosives. We utilized them recently in February. Jefferson County Hospital had an incident where they had an unknown chemical where four people had went down. And so they come identified what the chemical was. Although Beatrice, we have our own hazmat team, that team brings their laboratory in and can tell you exactly what the chemicals are. And there's also different parts of that now that they've split up. So, for example, in the wildfires out in western Nebraska, they had a problem with communications, so they took the civil support team's communications truck out there and helped them with communications. So I think there's a fleet of about 12 vehicles, trailers, trucks, and then the 28 personnel. And Chairman Bauman came out and toured the facilities that they brought with them, and if you want to add anything to that.
It's just impressive, all the stuff that they have, they've crammed into those trucks and the professionalism of the folks they have working. They even have one of the trucks is their communication truck, or their, I was calling it the forms truck. You know, in government, we like to have people fill out forms to keep track of what you're doing. Well, they have all these forms readily available, so they're being filled out basically in real time to keep track, and they can submit those, and they've got the expertise. But a lot of these are, they were full-time military.
Yes,
and then
that's their full-time position.
And they're, it's pretty impressive. And like I said, they use them for the wildfires, and each state has at least one of these,
yeah.
And this one's stationed out of Lincoln.
Thank you.
And it's pretty impressive, the professionalism and the resources that they have, and it was cold.
Yeah.
All the trucks are heated, just there, so that was nice. But the radio equipment and all the different ways that they can communicate, they can take multiple. You know, one of the things we find about when there's disasters across the country is who doesn't communicate? Well, they've got trucks that can communicate with every piece of equipment that's out there. They can tie it all together. So it was impressive. It was a little bit over, it was way over my head, but it was, you know, from a layperson in that aspect to look at that, it was nice to know that resource is out there.
And it's nice to know it's right in Lincoln. And we, you know, that's one of the major resources that we can call. And like I said, it might just be a phone call to them, that just ask them a question and they can help you through it. So it doesn't mean when you call them they'll bring all 28 people and 12, 15 vehicles. It's basically what your needs are.
And the command, was it Major Beatty?
Is
that his name? It is no cost to us. There's a protocol in which if we need this group through Mark, we'll contact Al Burnt at NEMA, and this resource is out there at no cost to the county. Yeah, really, to any agency, that's why they're there. They're put out there. So it's good to know that that's there.
This is their recertification process is what we did this time. We actually did their first certification, and then now we've done their recertification with them. So good group of people. But it's a good resource, and you know, to have, and especially this close. So I think they were in Fairbury within 90 minutes at the time they were called. So they don't mess around. There's some, they have a Avon, they call it a first Suburban. Actually, my Suburban is an old civil support team Suburban, but they have that vehicle that has quick response type vehicle that comes first, and they assess the situation and start calling everybody else in. So.
And they're all navy blue vehicles. So as I saw them coming into town, it was like you're watching a Men in Black movie. There's all these things showing up, and then whoop, all these antennas and things go up.
It's a matter of me calling NEMA and NEMA calling the governor saying yes. And it took that whole process took 4 minutes to do that day. So we timed it out. But anyway, that's kind of where we're at with emergency management. We had an incident. I'll pass this picture around. Had an incident Sunday night. No danger to the public from it. They had a liquid fertilizer container burst open. We stayed out there. Because of the chance of rain, DEQ wanted the dirt dug up that night before it got rain to it, and that washed it down to storm sewer or anything. But just so you can see, you see a lot of these trucks going up and down the road, how easy it is to dump 1,200 gallons of chemical, actually not chemical, of liquid fertilizer, biosulfate, into the ground. Fortunately, if it was going to happen, and it's not fortunate for the farmer, but fortunately it was going to happen, it happened where we were able to contain it right away. And they had to dig up Bauman Road and 7th Street is where that happened. And they had to dig up part of the road and about a foot of the road and then about 3 feet of the ditches they dug up and then took the dirt to spread it out into the field. Not considered a hazardous material, but because of the concentrate in a small area, if you spread it out like you're supposed to, it would cover about 22 acres. The chemical, they said, was what it should have covered.
When I came in Monday, I seen the cones up there and stuff, and I thought, well, that's kind of a bad time to be doing something out at the sale barn, you know, because all the parking they need and stuff. And I thought, well, why are they working on the road now?
That was a big concern, you know, where everybody was going to park. So we actually got a hold of Jim Freeman at Walmart and asked permission to park vehicles out there
and stuff. So
happens pretty quick. He was just going around a corner, just a simple slow speed, and It just the failure of the barrel. So with that, too quick, there's a lot of stuff going on with the explosions that happened down in Texas. Chief Dakey and I are visiting our first facility here. Our goal is to visit at least once a week, once every other week, and hit all of our Tier 2 facilities in the county. So we actually are visiting. We already had it scheduled before the incident, but we're visiting Crop Production Services today, so this morning. We're going to tour all the facilities and just public relations and just make sure we know what's out there and what the extreme, how extreme it could be if something did happen. So that's it.
Eric, did you get a hold of Bruce about the agreement?
He was gone.
Okay.
So hoping to be back today. I think he said he would be. So. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. And then with Gus and the emergency or the law enforcement side, the report was is that we were have the prisoners back in with the operating facilities again. I'm assuming that was a go, Gus.
I think we've got some. We couldn't get locked. We're full. By the time we went to get them, they're full again. So we got some out yet.
Okay. All righty. Other than that, there wasn't a whole lot else with law enforcement.
Any questions for Gus or Gary? No. Terry, Road and Bridge.
Yes, during committee Monday morning, Galen visited the NRD project, which is close to being wrapped up, I believe. There were 29 locations that he had identified as places where project people needed to put rock and gravel back on the road where that whole area where this lines are being put in took a heavy rain, you know, probably about 2 weeks ago, and it kind of did a little bit of damage, shall I say. So Galen visited with the NRD people, and they're going to give them a list of these 29 spots, and they're going to take care of that.
Terry, I'm going to be rude and interrupt you real quick. Yeah. We just have a timed issue at 9 to accept, reject, or award a bid on the motor grader. So if we'll just jump to that conversation. 9:02. Sorry, a couple minutes late. I should have looked beforehand. Sorry. The clerk was very astute and pointed that out. Go ahead.
Okay. We took bids last or 2 weeks ago on these motor graders. Galen and his office reviewed it, and I would like to make a motion to approve the Caterpillar motor grader at a cost of $169,920.
A motion by Juergens.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Further discussion.
Yes. Galen and the office staff down there have put together a sheet so we can explain why we chose that. There was a difference of $6,320 between the Caterpillar and the John Deere. The main thing that sticks out in my mind is the trade-in value, and this was Galen brought to everybody should have this in their packet of information. We pulled off a 2002 is what's the piece of equipment we traded in with about 15,000 hours. I went to machinerytrader.com, which is a commonly used site. The average price of the Caterpillar was approximately $108,000 as trade-in. The average price of the Deere, same year, same hours, was about $53,000. So to me, that's the one that stuck out. Now, that's not running the deer down. What that's doing is in 10 years, are these figures going to be accurate anymore? Probably not. They won't be the same, but we're just using the information we have today. Other things in our fact sheet, if you go down the list, this is comparing the two machines that we bid on. There's a few, filters, certain things that were a little bit higher. At the bottom of your sheet, you'll notice that there's a comparison between the Deere, which we do have. It's a 2007 located in Claytonia, and the Cat that we traded in. And it'll give you a, by the way, Galen, that office keeps fairly extensive records of all the maintenance, anything that goes on with any piece of equipment they have down there. So anybody's welcome to look at that. But it'll show you the hourly rate of each machine every year that it was in use. And on that, we're using that machine only as the one we traded in, but every year the hourly rates were a little bit less than the deer. Now, is that slanted a little bit? Could be. Operator makes a difference. What they're doing makes a difference, but we were trying to be as straight up as we could on that. A few other little comparisons. Typical grading, you know, there's a little bit of horsepower out of the cat. Tire size is 17.5. With that being said, this is why we made that recommendation.
Questions?
Anything to add?
Any further discussion? Question?
Gary. Was there, as far as meeting the specs, was there anything that the cat met that John Deere didn't? Was there anything spec-wise that was out of line with either of them?
No, and maybe Galen could address that, but everything was pretty well the same, apples to apples, I should say, on that part of it. The only difference is, if you notice in your sheet, the tire size, but I think the 17.5 to a 14, but the 14 is what the specs called for. The 17.5 is, I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, probably a little bit of an upgrade. So, but what the deer was bid with 14s, that's what the specs called for.
Right. I guess my other thought was, if you look at the fuel rate,
And Gary, in relation to that, you know, I didn't pay a lot of attention to that, because those fuel rates, it depends who does the study. So I didn't pay a lot of attention to that, because that it depends on what you're doing with that piece of equipment. So that probably to me was least irrelevant of all of it. So,
Galen, okay, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Sorry, that's a question for you. So we look at about a $6,300 difference, and I guess I'm looking at the other than some of the trade-in, the particulate filter. How often is that replaced? There's an $1,800 difference there. So my quick math was 3.4 years, that $6,300 savings would be gone. How long do we typically keep? The one we have now is 11 years old that we're trading in. So what?
Well, yeah, now on the O2, that wouldn't have this particular filter on. This is on these new Tier 4 designs. And that's my understanding, cattle will run approximately 5,000 to 6,000 hours, and John Deere will run approximately, I'm going to say around 4,000 hours approximately before you have to change them out.
How many hours do we typically run a year?
Just depends on the year. I'm going to say probably, this one here had a little over 1,000 hours on it. This one here had 1,700 hours on it. These are the records that I got our cost off of, comparison cost, and this is the hours that I'm looking at here. So you're looking at anywhere from 1,000 to 1,600 hours at least a year, depends on the winter.
So we may, in the life of this, we may change this filter once or twice.
Typically,
I'm just trying to figure out, like,
probably three. Like the machine we're trading in has right at 15,000 hours on it, so you can say probably three times. Okay. You know, at least.
Anymore.
I'll just make one other comment. I guess I know visited with everybody about it before. The reason we're doing the cat now instead of, or this grader now instead of next fiscal year, is because we decided to purchase that dump truck, and that's not coming until August. So that flows into next fiscal year, not in this year. And we budgeted in the budget for the purchase of that truck or whatever. And I didn't look up the exact dollar amount, what we budgeted for equipment. I can look it up quick. But that's why we're doing the cat now, just as a reminder. Not the cat, the grader.
Any Anything else, Terry? Any more comments? Any more discussion at all? So the recommendation is to purchase the Cat motor grader over the John Deere, and the difference is $6,320. The motion was for $169,920.
And there is $256,000 right now in our equipment, other equipment purchases in our budget line right now today yet. So,
one other comment I'd just like to make on that that machine that was traded in, that 2002. When it was purchased new in 2002, it was a purchase price of, it lists for $169,152. And if you go by that, the trade difference is $128,000. So you take that same machine, it's $169,000 was list on it. We got $95,000 trade in on it. So that leaves you a balance of $74,000 approximately dollars. If you divide that by the 15,000 hours, you're coming out at a per hour cost to own that machine at $4.94. So whenever you can do that, if it's below $10, you're doing one well of a job as far as trade-in. So this thing was a very, very good machine for the cost per hour that we had to put into it, you know, down through the last 11 years. So the cost per hour was cheap to run. And I might not explain that correctly, Galen.
That's correct.
Okay.
You're good with this?
Yes.
Any further discussion, Kath?
Well, I guess just as a clarification, we were going to buy a dump truck this year and a motor grader next year. Is that correct? It's not just, well, we have this money left over, so we're
That's right. Well, because the budget's set up the way it is, that was in the budget for so much equipment purchase this year, and we'd planned on buying the dump truck.
We approved the dump truck 2-3 months ago, right.
but it's not coming until next
but
year.
Not coming it, in, it was so, 6 months down the road, so it wouldn't be till August till we receive the dump truck.
Right. But the motor grader was scheduled.
The motor grader was in the plans for next year, knowing that we have a lease coming up and that.
So we're just flip-flopping.
We're just basically flip-flopping budget years is what we're doing because of the fact that we can't. In the budget, we cannot go in there and assume ahead of time that we're paying for that truck in August. We can't pay for the truck until it comes, the dump truck.
But it wasn't just we have this money left
over. No, it's not that we have this money.
It was scheduled, but we're just changing years.
Because that dump truck will be in next year's budget now. That will be in the budget for equipment purchases then. And just to make sure that we're not coming up with some year that we need to have a budget for two big pieces of equipment, trying to kind of schedule them, and because of the purchase, when it comes, we would have had the dump truck carried over into next year. We would have had to put that in the budget, and if we would trade for a grader next year, that would also had to be in the budget. And then that amount of money would have had to come out of some other line, or you would have had to figure out something with the budget to adjust that to handle all of that.
And one other thing to add, this dump truck that we did purchase, you know, has actually been in the budget for down there for at least 2 years. You know, we skipped it the first year, felt we couldn't afford it, we couldn't find what we wanted, whatever. So it's been in the budget for 2 years now for sure that I know of.
I believe, Galen, the county has 7 graders.
Yes,
7 graders. Yeah.
Yep.
A motion and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, vote. 7-0 to approve. Okay, Terry, go ahead and continue. But if you're very verbose, I'll stop you again. But that's okay. We have another time to end at 9:30. But go ahead.
Okay. We received a letter. I think everybody remembers we have that buried tank down in the yard. We received a letter finally from the DEQ, or Galen has, about that tank. He is supposed to do some samples of some water and send those back. So there is a person assigned to that. Whatever they tell us we have to do, we'll do. it's an issue that we'll probably resolve within the next 2-3 months, I hope. You know, it depends on the people, but they were notified. There's other minor things, but the other last thing I'd like to talk about is we attended a meeting on Tuesday night and set up some people that are interested in helping on the road bond. And I'd like to briefly touch on the first segment of that road bond. It's a segment from Philly to Adams. It's about a 13.5-mile stretch. There'll be a mill and overlay on these segments, ranging anywhere from 2.5 to 3 inches in depth. The road, is certainly in need of some maintenance. It's a highly trafficked road in Gage County. It's a main artery for the farm community to get to the ethanol plant, not only for delivery of corn, but as far as byproducts coming back. So it's a main school route. So this is one reason why we've picked that. And Myron, you could elaborate on the...
It gets used a lot. I know when they did the traffic counts, they were in the middle 500s to over 750 on all those segments of that road. Like Terry said, it's school route. Several buses go back and forth to Philly every day on that, not to mention all of the, as our sheriff's people, they sit out there and clock them sometimes, the young people driving back and forth. And that road gets used a lot by the school for activities and so on. That is one segment that has been cored and sampled by the Mark Minnelli's crew, and it showed the coring and the sample showed what condition that road was in and how, particularly from Pickerel down to Philly, that's one of our, I guess, worst condition roads we have that they did sample and stuff. And particularly the cupping where you see the tire tracks going or whatever, some of those, I remember when they did the samples they showed back, and if there's so much of a cup in there, you had so much useful life. Well, I know the one spot, I forget how deep it was, basically we were past our useful life on that part of the road, that road is in that type of condition.
Anything else, Road and Bridge?
I believe that should do it, Matt.
Now, I got one quick other thing. I forgot to bring it up earlier. The RC&D there out of Tecumseh, May 18th here at the Gage County Fairgrounds, they're doing an electronic recycling grant. And that's for anybody in the surrounding area, Beatrice and the other counties too. But they held one last fall in Crete, and they're doing about 4 or 5 more. They got a grant for it, and they're doing about 4 or 5 more in the surrounding counties. And May 18th, it's from 9 to 1 or 2 out at the fairgrounds. And I'm not, I don't have what all is allowed in that, but I know computers, Gary, you remember last time you took that sheet? It's an electronics recycling grant. And there might be a few things there's a small cost to, but I know they're going to contact the paper and the radio and stuff and get it out on there too. But just wanted to put that date out there, May 18th.
Okay. Anything else? That's road and bridge related, because sometimes that stuff ends up in the ditch.
Yeah.
Along with couches and what a... Anyway, okay. Well, we've got 12 minutes. Let's visit with Jane Ford-Widoff. Do you need?
I enjoy your meeting.
Oh, okay. Well, let's wait here. Let's
thank you guys.
Let's discuss. We're not going to take action on the agenda. It represents approve or disapprove MOU between Koch Industries and Gage County for the 89th Road Project. And I guess we won't take any action because we don't have the document completed. But if we had everything, we were going to take action. So let's have a discussion about that. Roger, can you
start with that. And if Galen, if you want to come up too, we ought to just get you a front row seat here. You always try to hide back there.
I basically just, we had a real good meeting. I was trying to think down at your office by telephone conference with Cook Legal Counsel and some of their people. And we've been basically exchanging emails back and forth, and I think we got down to maybe one issue that we're still toying with. And but other than that, I think it's been very productive. Galen's office and Jeff Wagner of Manelli's firm have been very helpful in protecting the county's interest in this. You can talk about technical stuff as far as, I mean.
This has to do with the road, and we want to be careful because Coke, it's their project, but it will involve us. It has to do with moving 89th West and who's responsible for doing what financially, legally, and that's kind of what we're working on here. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And Coke will be financially responsible for all the segment of the road. I think it's approximately 1,900 foot long. And they'll bear all expenses. Manelli Wagner's designing the road, and it will be contracted out to build. And like I said, the county pays the cost up front, and then we submit the bills on to Coke. They reimburse the county. Now that's set up to work.
And that road will be built to county specs and everything?
Yeah, it has to meet state and federal specifications.
So when we do the budget, we'll have to show that expense coming from a fund, and then when it comes in on the revenue side, we'll have to make sure it goes back to replace whatever fund we take it from. So probably a sinking fund, so it doesn't have to come out of the – well, it'll go on the general fund that we'll have to use to calculate the levy. So
we don't want to include it in the road and bridge part of that because that would affect that part of the budget quite a bit.
We'll just have to – knowing that it's going to come in on the revenue side. So,
Gary, do you have –
Yeah. Any questions about this? This is the second time this contract's come back. So there's been dialogue back and forth, and there were some changes.
Been a lot of
Roger's been working on it quite a bit.
Contract by email.
Are you sick of it yet?
Which is speeds it up.
So in a couple of weeks, 2 weeks, we'll probably have it.
Yeah, I think we'll have a finished product.
We should have yes. So
put it in the board packet for the next meeting. That's what we're shooting for.
Just for clarification, this is the road, the 89th road is the west road, west of the plant out there. It is not Hickory Road. This, what we're dealing with here, doesn't have anything to do with Hickory Road. This is just 89th road.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's... Thank you. Yeah. Again, no action now. We thought we may have everything ready, but we don't. So with this discussion. Let's see here.
Jane,
that's that.
Jane, I got 8 minutes for you. I don't want to cut you short. We'd love to hear from you. We need more. Well, you know what? If we'll stop you, and then you can come back. But go ahead. We'll go ahead and start. Jane Ford Whitoff, Public Health Solution.
Pardon my hitch in my hip. One of the benefits or detractions of being a caregiver, I guess. I'm really glad to see you. You know, I try to come 4 times a year to visit you. And just to give you an update on what we're doing and, you know, get some feedback as well. This year I started going to the schools and visiting the schools, all the schools. So... part of my effort to make sure that I have a better feel of what's going on in the community. I want to say Public Health Solutions, I know you probably feel some distance from us because we're not located here, but you're the largest county that we serve. We serve 5 counties, and basically we're here to prevent disease, promote health, and protect the citizenry, their health and well-being. And, of course, we're also very concerned. Part of all of that is helping to conserve resources, and that's a lot of what healthcare is about right now. And I wanted to add, I hadn't planned to say this, but when there was Myron was talking about the insurance, that I want you to know that any time you want to call on us to provide any kind of health-related services, we can do that at cost we're probably the cheapest group in town. I'm not forcing, you know, you into it, but it's just an offer that we can make a difference in expenses for people, and we often do that for other areas. This past past month or so, we had a community meeting to look at needs, because we don't just willy-nilly do whatever we want with to prevent, promote, and protect citizenry. So we had a planning meeting, and I was happy that Gus was there. Of course, he was leading the attack on insisting that we should have cookies and brownies next time.
That's healthy.
Which reminds me, too, I always bring treats for you, but, you know, we're into this real health thing, and what was planned for you were carrots in little bags, so you're probably thankful that I have not brought treats. But anyway, that's part of what we do. We had a health fair, and we were passing out vegetables and fruit, and the carrots were left. So, with regard to our planning process, the major concerns of people are the integrity of families. You know, families are the foundation of our country, and they're not, you know, they're falling apart, or they've fallen apart in many cases, and we need to do whatever we can to strengthen them, because when you strengthen families, you strengthen communities, you strengthen the county and the state. Another area of concern has been personal responsibility, and this isn't just about whether people take care of themselves. It's whether they take care of their own community and if they're involved in their own community. I was noticing so much what you probably all do, that the people are always complaining about how things are anymore. And really, personal responsibility is taking responsibility for our governance and what happens to us. And, of course, we're not talking about the federal government as much as we're talking about local and local communities. And the great thing about Nebraska is that you care about your communities. We care about our communities here. And we identify our needs and we address them. That's what a healthy community is. Well, anyway, personal responsibility is a big, big issue for people. Another one is obesity, which we hear about a lot, and then access to care, particularly for dental and behavioral health services. This is almost a crisis for people. So those are the issues, and some of them we're already working with you on, and others will probably engage in new initiatives with other people, because we work with other organizations. It's more about changing how things are than us doing for you or us becoming the big honchos with all of these services. That's not our interest. Anyway, I wanted to mention that Gage County has really benefited from a lot of what we do, and I'm kind of proud. I was noticing an article in the paper about the new emergency response building that's being constructed in Adams County. That in part was because of our work with them. They had a brownfield, which is a contaminated area designated by the feds, and we were able to work with them and find resources. We didn't do it, but we were able to help, and they were able to get resources to start that whole initiative, and it's just wonderful. So those are the kinds of things that we do rather than doing something that's just us. Another thing is we've had a Safe Routes program here for quite a long time, and we've put a lot into the schools. Well, and we've worked a lot with Lincoln Schools and the Lincoln School. And what we're anticipating doing as an outgrowth of that is to help make Beatrice a particularly a safe biking community. And what we're going to do there is we're working with a number of different organizations, including law enforcement, to place bikes, and we're getting all these bikes and helmets purchased, so they'll be available on loan or whatever to these kids. And also, we've applied to Blue Cross Blue Shield for this training for community members to work with kids in programs to help them learn how to bike safely, and to use the streets responsibly, because you know there's always that conflict between the bicyclists and the automobile people. Anyway, we're real pleased with that. We're going to be moving the voltage unit, which counts how many people are walking and biking, into the park, which will also help some community efforts. The other thing I wanted to mention is, now this is more district-wide. We had a little bit more flu last year than we had expected. One of the concerns this year is something you don't hear about too much is H7N9. This is in addition to the seasonal flu. We don't talk about it too much because right now it's not a big threat as we see it. But this is the newest. It's a flu virus that's never been among people before, so there's going to be no immunity to it. It's in China, and it's been called one of the bird flus. And they think it's coming primarily from pigeons, but it's probably one of the most lethal flu viruses around. They say it's even worse than SARS. So there's there's probably a 25% death rate, and others are left really pretty ill. What's the challenge in following this is that birds don't become very sick at all. So they're the sneakers. What we're doing there is, you know, it's not to cause any alarm, but just so you know the background of what we do, the silent work we do, is we're working with CDC to get ready. All of the material's been sent to all of the vaccine organizations or the people that make vaccines, so they're going to be ready to produce that vaccine if we need it. And we're also undergoing how we're going to distribute vaccine in a way that's better than what we did last time. So just so you know, there's no evidence that there's any sustained human-to-human transmission, which is what would really be a threat to us. Right now it doesn't seem to be, and so it's not really a threat. So anyway, just so you know the kinds of things we do. One concern I have is about rabies, and I know we don't have that many cases of rabies, but one of the things we do is make sure that people that have been exposed are, you know, get a preventative vaccine if they need it and whatever. And this past year, I suppose we've done 12 people, and what we're seeing is more and more is there's kind of a relaxed attitude about rabies. You don't think it's a worry. But, you know, you get a skunk going through your barn, bites a very expensive farm animal, you know, $20,000 or whatever. I don't know how much each farm animal or a special farm animal might cost. But regardless, you can lose cattle to that. So I'm not advocating immunizing all the cows in the world, but that we need to be careful and immunize those that we can, or those valuable animals, including cattle, but primarily cats and dogs and things like that. So rabies is something that we're really concerned that we've become kind of sloppy about. One thing I wanted to mention, and this is probably where I'm going to get cut off.
Yeah, I'm going to cut you off here.
Am I getting cut off right now?
Okay. We'll cut.
I'll wait.
Yeah, come back.
I'll wait.
We have a timed item at 9:30. It's 9:33 on the clock. I need a motion to open up a public hearing to hear support and or opposition from the public on a special use permit 2013-2, construction of an indoor riding arena, stables, and boarding. Locations, lot 1 and 2, section 12, Nemaha Township and Spring Lakes Estates. Need a motion to open up a public hearing.
Motion.
Moved by Dorn, seconded by Hill. Vote. 7-0, we're in a public hearing to hear support and or opposition. Would you like to? Lisa Wiegen.
Good morning, everybody. In terms of this particular riding facility, it is located in an A2 district, and so that because of that, it was required to have a special use permit because the area is going to be used for recreational purposes. It is located in Spring Lake Estates subdivision. And Spring Lake actually is a subdivision that's located on 160 acres of land, which also includes the pond, too. The applicants are Dr. Tom and Dr. Cindy Evans. They're both veterinarians. They've lived in the subdivision since 1994, and they've practiced veterinary medicine for the past 30 years. We sent out a total of 133 letters, both twice, one for our hearing and then again on respect to today's hearing. So when the Spring Lake subdivision was first developed, one of the requirements of subdivisions is to have a covenants agreement. And so in the case of Spring Lake, that subdivision is governed by a board of directors, and that's a requirement of their covenants agreement. Issues of the concerns within the subdivision then are directed towards that board, that governing board, and the board's responsibility is to follow up with those concerns between the members of the application and their association. The association's agreement does allow for this particular construction and the operation of a horse stable, and also it allows for outside buildings for animal housing up to 50 AUs. So one AU is 750 pounds. So in this case, that would allot for about 25 in through their horses. They also allow cattle, which bovine or sheep or fowl, but no hogs are allowed. So therefore, in terms of the covenants agreement itself, everything was in compliance as far as our subdivision and the commission feels. But currently on their property, there is an outdoor riding arena to the south of the proposed site, but it's been used for many years. The Evans has stated that they do not intend for this public facility. It's not to be a public facility, but it's not for rodeo events and activities like that. It's only a facility to work with equine and to teach youth how to ride. He acknowledged that they have not had any prior complaints from neighbors, emphasizing that their intent is not to be a nuisance to anyone, but to be respectful of everyone else in their area. So he did express, Dr. Evans, who submitted the application, did address that if complaints were heard, he certainly would talk with his neighbors and address those concerns. So as a commission, we did discuss the road access off of 96th Road. We discussed the public safety should a horse get loose. We also discussed fly and dust control and the times of operations, specifically if lights were on and that sort of thing. So at the hearing, at our hearing, no one attended or spoke publicly for or against the project. However, we did receive one email for, and we received one email against in opposition, and that opposition was directed mostly towards the lights on the existing arena being on late at night. Dr. Evans was not aware of that particular problem at the time, and he said at that time that he would address that particular neighbor and address those concerns. So based upon the application, everything in line, the covenants agreement is in compliance, and also a minimum amount of concern, we do recommend approval. Questions? Okay.
Okay, thank you. One gentleman I don't recognize.
Tom.
Would you like to come?
Yeah.
Please. Just name an address for the record, please. Thank you.
Tom Evans, 2316 South 96 Road, Firth. So my wife and I are the applicants, obviously, and I think Lisa's done a very good job of covering everything that we've discussed. I guess if there's any questions about what our operations are going to be there, the building that we intend to put up, that type of thing, I'm, you know, more than happy to address them. I've got some pictures of the area if you'd like to see those. Maybe you've already got those on hand. But I think, as I mentioned, I think Lisa's addressed most of the things I intended to discuss. So if there's any additional questions.
The only thing I was going to say, Tom, is by reading the covenants agreement, it almost kind of looks like that was written with the idea that maybe this was something you guys were planning on when the covenants was set up. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, we were We were, you know, part of the association at that time that those covenants were drafted, so we had some input into it.
Yeah, that's kind of what it looked like. Yeah.
Any more questions for me?
No, I'll just make a comment. Known Tom quite a few years. They're part of the horse club with him, and our kids are out now, but he still is very active in it and stuff. And they've had horses up on this Spring Lake Estates, you and the Hofflings, for probably since it started or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, as far as I know, the people in the area get along with very good and good neighbor.
Thank you.
All right, for the question. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming.
You ready to close the hearing?
I guess so. Seeing any more discussion for or against? No comments. Need a motion to close the public hearing?
Close the hearing at 9:40.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion. Vote. 7-0. Public hearing is closed. Next on the agenda is to approve or disapprove resolution for the special use permit 2013-2 for the construction of an indoor riding arena, stables, and boarding.
13-14
is resolution.
Motion to approve.
Moved by Dorn.
Second.
Seconded by Lytle. We're fighting over that one, aren't we?
Go ahead.
Okay. Any more discussion? We have a motion and a second to approve. Vote. 7-0 to approve. Anything else? Last thing we have will be a closed session. We're going to discuss FOP. Oh, Jane, come back.
Jane Dash.
Gus had your back. He was throwing cookies and brownies at me. If he had them, if you'd have brought them.
Yeah.
She brought cookies this morning, but Gus got a hold of them first.
So, yeah. He did. Okay. I guess it's okay right. For me to say that my daughter was in Pony Club, and it's a great – they have a Pony Club there. Because that's a great opportunity for kids and families. What I'm asking for you, of you now, maybe you don't want me to come back now, is I need your help on something. And what this relates to is our Skip Flu program. You know, each year we've asked you to contribute towards the Skip Flu program. Largely, it's paid through other sources, but. We've asked each of the counties to contribute to the Skip Flu program, which is the immunization of kids against seasonal influenza. And why we do that is that the two main vectors for spread of flu in communities are children, school children, and healthcare providers. Well, healthcare providers pretty much are taken care of, but the school kids are not. If you leave school kids to their own and parents to their own devices, the immunization rate is roughly 10% across the state. We have worked hard to conduct an in-school influenza program, which is recommended by the Centers for Disease Control's Away for disease mitigation, and we have done it in all of our schools. I think all but one small school participate, and I think they're going to come in this year. It's a parochial school. Anyway, all of our counties have been contributing to this Skip Flu program for the last 3 years, and except Gage County has not. We've asked you for $2,250 to help us with the program, and I wanted to just give you some other information because I was watching very carefully because they say it's evidence-based that it does make a difference. Well, I wanted to see if it really made a difference. And just some observations. I should. Of all the counties, and I don't have the data here. I was looking for it, and I couldn't find the exact figures. If you look at accumulated cases and reports of cases, and it's not an accurate figure, but it's the best we can, probably Gage County is the highest per capita in flu. Next would be Jefferson County, and then the others are below that, significantly below that. And I'm not saying that this is all directly because of the Skip Flu program, but it's one of the measures we have for reducing influenza outbreaks. And I was looking at these percentages, and I got these from the state. So these are, and again, there are errors in this because not everybody enters their data, but I know they do a good job in Gage County. And 36% of kids under four are immunized against flu here, which is really a very good percentage. It's second highest amongst all the counties. Among school kids, only 17% are immunized here, and the others are considerably higher. In fact, the highest is 30%. And it's not that that we hold back necessarily, but when we have more support for a program, we can put more into it. We can do more promotion and get more participation. And we do run on a shoestring, but I guess the important point is that it does make a difference. And we would like your consideration of including this in your budget. I know that you have a lot of things that you have to fund or choose to fund and have not wanted to add any new people or any new organizations to the funding list. I think that's been primarily what the rationale has been. We don't ask an awful lot. The direct return on investment from a public health dollar is $3 for every $1 that we get from from our basic funding. We're able to bring in $3 of grants and things like that. But we also make much more impact that you can't really exactly measure when you talk about reduction of illness and death. Anyway, I don't want to belabor it. I just I know that in years past we haven't really, because I don't like to ask for money, that we haven't really emphasized this. It's a very and again, it's a small part of the cost of what it takes us in to do the program in Gage County. We do also ask hospitals and also the schools themselves to participate. In some counties, that's pretty extensive where they do the hospitals. Two hospitals actually participate and provide the immunizations with us. And there are, I think, three schools that make monetary contributions.
How many folks would be eligible for the program? Projected, how many? Do you have a number, say, that there would be 5,000 that could potentially participate? Did I miss that?
Oh, I'm sorry. It would be the number of school children. Let me see. That would be, in your county, 4,236 kids.
I might add, our county, Gage County, has the highest numbers of any of the counties that Public Health Solutions represents. And again, the need here and the amount of that we've spent, it's almost embarrassing in what we have done as a county, which is nothing, to support these programs. And so I would hope Jane will make her request to the budget formally, and I hope we will this year decide to fund it.
Quick math is 53 cents per eligible child. Mm-hmm. 53 cents.
Yes.
And you said most of this is provided from other sources?
Yeah.
And this is for what part of them? I mean, a gap in coverage or?
Yeah. You know, a lot of people think that, oh, well, now everybody has access to immunizations, and that's not true. Okay. A lot of people have copays.
Mm-hmm.
Some people do not have insurance, period. I think it's 11% of the population doesn't have insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you have very many undocumented people, but undocumented people, of course, can't either. But we do ask for contributions. We have parents. You know, we do get parental contributions, and we do, have other sources of funding. We use the state vaccine where we can, although we can't use it extensively. And then health funds go into it. Our funds go into it, too. But we would really appreciate your consideration of that. And that's all I have. So,
any more questions for Jane at all?
And, again, it's a pleasure to serve Gage County. We do a lot of great programs here. It's probably one of our bigger successes among the counties. So thank you.
Thank you. All right. My agenda is pretty marked up here. Did I miss anything? I've got check marks all over the place here. I think we're down finally to closed session. Need a motion to go into closed session to discuss the FOP, and this is regarding the contract that we're working on, and some other, I would say, rather quick personnel issues that have to do with the county. Then need a motion to go to a closed session for a protection of the public interest and for needless injury to the reputation of any individual.
So moved at 9:49.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Vote 7-0 to approve.
You didn't even verbalize.
Yeah, boy. That doesn't happen very often. This is about the only place that'll happen.
Okay, 11:15. Need a motion to come out of closed session.
So moved.
Moved by Byers.
Second.
Seconded by Lytle. Come out of closed session. Discussion. Vote 6-0. Dorn is absent. Okay, anything else for the good of the order? Everyone feel like they had an opportunity to be heard and say what they needed to say? Gage County Board of Supervisors adjourned 11:14.
I'll make that 11:15.
I was going to say.
Oh, 11:15.
Well, Jerry, what are you going to do? Well, today?
You said 11:15 coming out.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I did?
I was just going to say so.